Have you ever been in deep water? You know what I mean by that? I think everybody understands what that simply means. Well, tonight we're going to talk about the runaway prophet and deep water in a literal sense. So Jonah has fled from the presence of the Lord. That's the way the Bible puts it. But there's no escape from God. Arriving at Joppa, he finds a ship conveniently waiting to take him to Tarshish. He pays the fare. It all seems providential. But the providential open door was not the right way for Jonah. But sadly, he did not realize that at the time. He just wants to get away. So he pays the fare. He boards the ship and sets sail. But if Jonah thought he left his troubles behind, he was wrong. He was completely wrong, because Jehovah was in hot pursuit. And the Lord sent his private detective after Jonah to apprehend this runaway preacher. So how did God apprehend his runaway servant? He used the storm. And sometimes that's the way the Lord even works with his people today. He used the storm. And in these verses before us, we can see Jonah, he's in the ship. He's in the storm. But he ends up in the sea. So we want to think about the subject tonight that is before us, the runaway prophet in deep water. First of all, there's the sending of the storm. Notice what it says there, but the Lord sent out a great wind. So Jonah has made his move. We see that in these opening verses. But now God made his move. He allowed Jonah to flee from the land of Israel in the wrong direction. He allowed him to do so. But now it was time for God to correct his erring prophet. God was really saying to him, so far and no more. Hugh Martin has a tremendous little book, or a large book, on the prophecy of Jonah. And he said, the Lord can afford to wait. Many years ago, when I went into Bible college, there was a family from the Tandragee Church, and they had befriended me years before that. And in order to save me having to pay the fee, the external fee for the student, they said, we'll put you up Monday through Friday in our house, no charge. That's our love gift to you. Very thoughtful people. And the father of the home was just buried a couple of weeks back there. Good family. I enjoyed their company. I appreciated what they did for me in those early days. I had a nice bedroom. It looked out to the front yard. And the grass that they had was actually a field. That was their front lawn. And I thought to myself, well, it's going to take them a long time to get that grass cut. So one day when I arrived home from college, I could see this pole out in the middle of the field. I could see a goat there, and I discovered that the goat was tethered there. There's a leash on the goat. So that was okay. I headed off next morning after a hard day in Hebrew and all that kind of stuff, as Mr. McDowell would know. I returned home. I looked out the window again, and I could see, I don't know, maybe 2 feet out from the pole, the centre of the pole, the grass was all eaten up. And the next day, I did the same thing. I came home, and then I could see, well, it's maybe 3 feet out now, right around. And so the circle is getting bigger, the circle of the grass that has been eaten. And at the end of the week, the whole thing was cut. A wise farmer. Some of these farmers, old farmers, are wise people. And he didn't need a machine to do it. He had the goat, and they showed a bit of common sense. But the point is this. At the end of each day, the goat could see the green grass out there, and it tried to get at it. And then it discovered it was on a leash. It could only go so far and no more. It's a simple illustration to prove the point. This is exactly what happened to Jonah. He was straining at the neck to get away. And God said, so far and no more, Jonah. I'm not kidding with you anymore. I'm going to deal with you seriously. So Jonah must now suffer the consequences of his disobedience as God intervenes supernaturally to alter his course. The Lord literally altered his course and turned him around and caused him to head in the direction he should have gone in the first place. Now notice how verse 3 begins. It begins with, but Jonah. Do you see that? But Jonah. And then following on from that in verse 4, notice how verse 4 begins. But the Lord. So it's but Jonah, followed by these words, but the Lord. And one author that I read said, Jonah made a great blunder of trying to get into a butting contest with God. No man ever wins such a contest. He said, he went on to say that logging horns with God is a sure way to get dehorned. And if you upset God, the consequences following on, God will get upset with you. So it's just like a gigantic chess game here in Jonah chapter 1. Every move Jonah made, God moved to counteract that particular move until Jonah saw that God was going to win. That fighting against God was in vain. God was going to have the last say. But Jonah, that speaks of disobedience. Following on, but God, that's discipline. So Jonah is on his travels, if you like. But the point I want to emphasize is this, very simple. God is on his throne. And so he only allows Jonah to go so far. He allowed him to do that. He allowed him to lose his money. He allowed him to have to flee that 50 miles down from Gath Hepher where he lived, 3-day journey, whatever. He allowed him to become exhausted and so on. But now God says, Jonah, it's time to bring in the leash now. So Jonah is fleeing, but Jehovah is following. The Lord sent out, verse 4, it's the same word that is used in verses 5, 12, and 15. It's translated cast forth. So when you come across those words cast forth, it's the exact same word that is used here, the Lord sent out. I've mentioned this before. Literally, it means that the Lord hurled out, and I've used this also, but I'm emphasizing it again to stress the point. Saul hurled the javelin at David to pin him to the wall. Same word. Saul wanted to pin David to the wall. He didn't like what David was doing. He was so successful. It's got to be stopped. So God says, now, Jonah, you've got to stop, and I'm going to stop you. So that speaks of force. It speaks of an accurate aim at a specific target. So here is this vessel in the midst of the Mediterranean Sea. Maybe no vessels near them. So God hurls out the javelin of his word after the false, after the fleeing prophet. He's got a specific target. He's got a mark on his back. So God says, Jonah, I'm coming after you. And really God was saying, Jonah, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Now, this is actually the second great thing that we read of in this chapter, the great wind. So God sent a great wind to apprehend him. He prepared a great fish to preserve him so he could go to preach to a great city. These great things are linked together in divine providence. There's nothing in the Bible by chance. Even these simple things are telling a connected story. There's a reason for it. And that's the way God wants to work in our lives, in your life, my life. God never sends a storm without a reason. That's what I want to emphasize too. Remember Mark chapter 4, the disciples, they faced the storm as they obeyed the command of Christ. The Lord said, let's go to the other side. So they immediately consented. They set off to the other side in the vessel with Christ. Christ was with them. And as they were obeying his voice, they encountered a storm. But in Jonah's case, he was disobeying. And the word for wind that is used here is first mentioned there in Genesis chapter 8, verse 1. Let me just read that verse to you. verse 1 of chapter 8. And God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the cattle that was with him in the ark. And God made something. He made a wind. And now here on this occasion, he sends this wind. And the first time the Hebrew word is used is in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, and it's translated spirit. And sometimes it's translated breath. So we're thinking here about the breath of God. Ezekiel chapter 37, verse 5, that is, there's translated breath. So what's the connection? What's the point? What am I trying to say here? What am I trying to get across? Here's a runaway servant, a runaway preacher. He's going in the wrong direction. God's on his trail. God is following hard on his trail. And how does he go about this? He sends out this wind, a word that can be translated as spirit or breath. Can we not apply this spiritually? How does the Lord restore his people? He comes after them by his spirit, by his breath, the breath of God. So the Lord's after Jonah to restore to him the joy of his salvation. Do you get the picture here? When we grow cold, when we become indifferent, the Lord seeks to restore us and bring us to the place of the restoration of joy, and he uses his Holy Spirit, his breath, to take the word of God, to apply it to our hearts, to show us our folly and our foolishness, just the way he was working now to show Jonah the folly of his foolish ways. So God had called him. We've got to be clear about that. God called him. Now he corners him. Have you ever been put in a corner? I've been put in a corner a few times. Not a really nice place to be, even way back in school days when you step there, like, go into the corner. Over there. He stood there until he repented of your erroneous ways. You didn't do the spellings. You didn't do the homework. Go and stand in the corner. It's not nice to be in a corner. Sometimes God puts us in a corner. He was putting Jonah in the corner because of his erroneous ways. So he called him and then he cornered him and he was about to chasten him. Proverbs 3, verses 11 and 12. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. Now that word faint is interesting. It means to relax. It means to unloose. When this happens, the archer would unloose his bowstring so that it is no longer ready to propel the arrow to the target. When the bowstring does not twang, it is useless. Correction is not intended to discourage people. Chastening hand of God. He chastens us because he loves us. It's not to discourage us, but to strengthen us and to prepare us to be used by him in his service. So that's why he said, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord. So when we get out of sorts with God, he's going to chasten us. Not to discourage us, but to encourage us and seeking to prepare to use us for his work by such a discipline. And a root word for suffering, I discovered this during my studies as well this past week. One of the root words for suffering is to educate. That's interesting. Because God sometimes educates his saints this way, even by the chastening, his chastening hand. He educates us. It's there to teach us. And one commentator said, God whispers in health and prosperity, but being hard of hearing, we fail to hear his voice. God turns up an amplifier by means of suffering when his voice begins to boom. Aye, when we hear the voice of God coming like that, we better prepare because there's something coming from him that we didn't learn through reading. It's got to come through discipline, So Jonah heard the word, but he didn't obey it. Now he's going to come through the wind. He's going to be taught a lesson through the wind. And there's an old Arabian proverb that goes like this: all sunshine makes a desert. Therefore God sent a storm. You could get news of this nice weather, can't you? Very nice. It seems to help us to forget our troubles and difficulties and so on. You get an old, cold, miserable, wet, damp kind of a day, and it gets us all tangled up and all bothered. And sometimes that's the very time we discover God coming to us and speaking to our hearts and doing us good. So you have the sending of the storm. Then you have the success of the storm. So the shipmaster came to him and said, "Awake, O thou sleeper." That's the title he gives to Jonah. O sleeper. The backslider is asleep. Now, this is the only place in the Old Testament, in the Bible, where we read of Jonah sleeping. And we know where he slept. Well, he was in the ship on the Mediterranean Sea. When he slept, he was in the storm. We know that. Who wakened him when he was asleep in the storm? Well, it's a shipmaster, a captain. "Arise, that we perish not," he said. And then how the storm was calmed. Verse 12, he says, "Take me up and cast me forth into the Mediterranean." Now, I suppose you know by now that there's a similar incident in Matthew's Gospel where we read the only time when Jesus was asleep. Matthew chapter 8, verse 34, he was asleep. Where was he? He slept on the Sea of Galilee, in the little fishing boat on the Sea of Galilee. When did he sleep? When he slept, there arose a great tempest, verse 24. Who awoke him out of his sleep? Well, the disciples awoke him, saying, "Lord, save us, we perish." There's another great similarity here. I think there is. You can see it for yourself. Why do we have these two stories placed, one in the Old Testament and one in the New? There's got to be a reason for it. Give some consideration to it and think about it. The point I see here is that the Lord was in control of both situations. Now, in the case of the disciples, they were close to Christ. He was in the same vessel with them. They were busy doing whatever fishermen do, and he was asleep, and he had a pillow or a cushion there. We read of that in one of the Gospels, at least. And he was there. They were close to him. But in the case of Jonah, Jonah is not close to God. He's a prophet on the run, you see. And soon he's going to get into deep water. He's not just in the water yet, but he's on the way to it. It's coming. Oh, if Jonah only knew what was coming. But there we see the picture. Now, the Septuagint, that's the Greek version of the Old Testament, suggests the captain found Jonah because he was fast asleep. I mentioned this last week. And there in that version, it seems to suggest that he was snoring. And, you know what it's like to snore. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're so out of it, so engrossed in your sleep, you don't know you snore until next morning. Then your wife says, "That was an awful night last night. I thought there was thunder in the place." You think about that, the deep sleep. And they suggest that Jonah was snoring, and that's how the sea captain knew where he was. He was sleeping when he should have been praying. He was running when he should have been pressing on. He wasted his money, by the way. He didn't get value for money, his ticket. He didn't get a refund either. He wasted his money. He wasted his time when he should have been doing his duty. He wasted his energy running from God. No wonder he was tired. No wonder he went into a deep sleep on the vessel when he should have been doing his duty. No wonder he was tired. He hoped for rest, but he encountered a tempest. He encountered a storm. He slept through the storm like some Christians today. I told you this before, but I'll tell it to you again. When we were in Orlando, my mother came out. It was the second hurricane that we experienced. She arrived on the Friday. We had to leave our wooden mansion the Friday and go to stay with one of the people of the congregation. Mother was very tired, and she said, "I think I'm going to go to bed." And so she did go to bed, and me stayed up. We wanted to just see what was going to happen. And next morning I said to her, and it was an awful night, I says, "Well, Mum, what did you think of that storm last night?" She says, "I never heard it." I said, "You never heard it?" She says, "No, it took my hearing aid out, you see." She didn't hear the thing. She didn't hear it. She was unconscious of the whole thing. Jonah was sleeping through the storm. And some Christians are like that today, at ease, while the ship, and we'll call the ship the United Kingdom, is in the midst of the storm and is close to sinking, while many of God's people sleep. We're in dire straits in this country. Like Jonah, we'd better wake up before it's too late. So he's sound asleep, you know. But suddenly he was interrupted by the voice of the captain. What an awakening it must have been. He had to acknowledge, "I'm a prophet of the Lord. I'm in the service of the great God of Israel." I'm sure he felt embarrassed. I'm sure he felt humbled. But the Lord, in his providence, because he guided even these mariners to use the lot. And at the annual meeting, they used Acts chapter 1, dealing with the lot, how the disciples determined who should take the place of Judas. It's the only place in the New Testament where the lot is used, Acts 1, verses 21 through 26. And these individuals, whatever method they used, God always puts the cap on the right head. And the mariners were given to understand Jonah. Jonah's the culprit. He's the man. So the storm arrested his progress to Tarsus. He's not going to complete the journey. Now, had he completed the journey, we might never have heard of Jonah again. He never would have come back again. We never would have had this book. We never would have had this story. It's an instructive story inspired by the Spirit of God. It's here for a reason, because God is on the throne. And he wanted this man in a certain place at a certain time to do a certain work, and nothing could stop that happening. God is still sovereign and supreme in the heavens. And men may try this and men may try that to bring down the cause of God, but God's cause will still be maintained, because God is the sovereign Lord of the whole universe. And just like Jonah, he allows people to take their own course. He allows them to continue on doing whatever they so desire, but the day comes when God says, it's now time to bring in the leash. You have shouted, you've protested, you've taken your stand against me. Now I'm going to have my say. So let's keep our eyes on the Lord today. And then the final thing is, there's the stilling of the storm. The sea ceased from a raging, verse 15. And once the problem was identified and dealt with, God stilled the storm. Do you see that? When Achan was identified as the culprit, remember in that campaign against Ai, they were successful at Jericho. They thought, well, we've had great success. They got a wee bit arrogant, full of themselves. We'll just go up here without really seeking the Lord. It's only a small place, a small army. Let's just go up and we'll have no problem. They made a great mistake. They had to run from before this small city. Some of them died. But when the problem was identified, when Achan was identified and he was dealt with, then they went up again against Ai, and they had successful, and defeat was turned into victory because the culprit was found. And the same thing is happening here. Jonah has been identified by the lot and the providence of God. They take him up, they cast him in. The minute he hits the water, there it is, it stops. Obviously, it was God's purpose to demonstrate to Jonah and the mariners and the whole world that the wages of sin is death. That's what we can glean from this particular portion. So God speaks in chapter 1, verse 1. His word is not heard again until chapter 3, verse 1. And in between, there's the chastening. God speaks. There's disobedience, followed by chastening. before God speaks again. He had been on his way down, but the Lord sent a great wind. He was going in the wrong direction, but now he's turned around and he's going in the right direction. Now, when Jonah decided to run, he lost so much. He fled swiftly to Joppa, journey of about 3 days. It's downhill, you see. And it's always easy running downhill, but then suddenly God brought him to a standstill. Remember the goat? Tugging away, suddenly it's brought to a standstill. Can't go any further. Stops. Now, the Lord could have caused Jonah to fall and break a leg 3 or 4 miles away from Gath Hefer, where he lived. Or when he arrived there at Joppa, he could have discovered that there wasn't a vacant place on the vessel. Okay, but it didn't work that way. God had to send a storm. He sent the storm, but then he stilled the storm, because it accomplished his purpose. It accomplished his divine purpose. Now, insurance companies, and I'm sure many of you know this, are not far off when they describe the damage done by, say, a tropical storm as an act of God. This storm was an act of God. Mysterious, supernatural. The mariners knew it was something special. It was God's hand was behind the whole thing. And when God broke in upon Jonah at the time of the storm, it was a lesson he never forgot. That's why he takes so much time to write about it in this first chapter of his book. And then you move into chapter 2. It's the same thing. So God turned him around. He learned a valuable lesson, by the way. He discovered something new. I hope you discover something new tonight in the Word. And he learned something very precious, if you want to use that word. He learned how to survive in the belly of a great sea monster or fish. He survived it. And he learned how God kept him alive. It'd be interesting to have a chat with Jonah when we get to glory. Jonah, what was it like down in there? That's a mystery. It's a secret. We might never know. But at least Jonah knew. God got the upper hand. And God's will was done. And Jonah survived the storm after having learned a powerful lesson. May God bless his word. Let's bow for prayer. So we'll pray, and please keep in mind tonight again the need for a pastor. I'd like to thank those who have spoken with me, called me. You've let me know your thoughts and feelings. I appreciate that very much. Continue to do so in the days to come. Let's all bow for prayer. Mr. Meadow, would you like to lead us, please, brother, in prayer? After Mr. Meadow has prayed as many as possible, enter in, seek the Lord's face. Mr. Meadow.